Welcome to another edition of the Health First Show. I'm your host, Dave Fuller, and today we're going to be talking with Debbie Lynn Smith about her book, Running from Cancer. And in the second half of the show, we're going to be talking with Larry Payne about his latest book, Yoga Therapy and Integrative Medicine, where ancient science meets modern medicine. But before we do that, here's Alan with the health news.
Peer pressure might not be the bad influence that parents fear it is. So says a new study that found teens with close friends were more likely to be healthy later as young adults. Study co-author Joseph Allen, a researcher at the University of Virginia in Charlottesville, says these results indicate that remaining close to, as opposed to separating oneself from the peer pack in adolescence, has long-term implications for adult physical health. In this study, it is a robust predictor of increased long-term physical health quality. However, the study did not prove that having close friends in adolescence caused a person to be healthier as an adult. The findings suggest that the quality of teens' relationships with other teens may influence their health in adulthood by affecting anxiety and stress levels, according to the authors of the study, published recently in the journal Psychological Science. Can eating a lot of fish boost your mood? Maybe, say Chinese researchers. Overall, the researchers found that people who consumed the most fish lowered their risk of depression by 17% compared to those who ate the least. Lead researcher Fang Li of the Department of Epidemiology and Health Statistics at the Medical College of Qingdao University in China said studies they reviewed indicated that high fish consumption can reduce the incidence of depression, which may indicate a potential causal relationship between fish consumption and depression. But this association was only statistically significant for studies done in Europe, the researchers said. They didn't find the same benefit when they looked at studies done in North America, Asia, Australia, or South America. The report was published September 10th online in the Journal of Epidemiology and Community Health. Children who have less than 20 minutes to eat lunch at school end up eating less and wasting more healthy foods, a new American study reveals. Federal government guidelines have enhanced the nutritional quality of school lunches, but there are no guidelines on how much time students should have for a lunch period, according to researchers from Harvard T.H. Chan School of Public Health in Boston. Study authors said that 20 minutes or less may not be enough time to eat. In addition, waiting in serving lines or arriving late to lunch sometimes left children in the study with as little as 10 minutes to actually sit and eat, the investigators found. Students with less than 20 minutes for lunch ate 13% less of their entrees, 12% less of their vegetables, and 10% less of their milk than students who had at least 25 minutes to eat, the study found. There were no significant differences in the kids' food choices, but those with less time to eat were much less likely to select a fruit, according to the study, published online September 11th in the Journal of the Academy of Nutrition and Dietetics. Otherwise healthy people who have poor sleep habits may be putting themselves at risk for early signs of heart disease, a new study suggests. Folks who get too much or too little sleep or not enough quality rest are more likely to suffer from stiffened arteries and calcium deposits on the walls of their major arteries, said study lead author Dr. Chanwon Kim. Coronary calcium develops way before heart attack symptoms occur, and a greater amount of calcium in the coronary arteries predicts future development of heart disease, said Kim, a clinical associate professor in the Center for Cohort Studies at Kyungbok Samsung Hospital in Seoul, South Korea. The sweet spot appears to be about 7 hours of sleep, the researcher reported. The study findings were published September 10th in the American Heart Association journal Arteriosclerosis, Thrombosis, and Vascular Biology.
Thanks for that, Alan. Well, our first guest, Debbie Lynn Smith, is a published author of both fiction and nonfiction short stories. She's written a number of books, and her latest, Running from Cancer, is a book about her memoir of her experience with cancer. Debbie Lynn, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you very much for having me, Dave.
Tell us a little bit about, you know, why you wrote the book and what it means to you.
Well, I wrote the book because I didn't know anything about cancer. And when my mom passed away from pancreatic cancer in 2009, that was basically my first experience. And on the anniversary of her aspirin, I found that I was about to go through my own experience with breast cancer. So I was so naive about everything. And through the whole experience, it came to me that 50% of the cancers out there are preventable. And I'm sure that's what I had, was something that's preventable. And I didn't, if I had just tightened my own anti-cancer belt a little bit, I wouldn't have had to go through this in the first place. So I wrote the book as a memoir so that people could actually see what going through cancer is like. And I mean, we all know people that have had cancer, but we might not know that it's really not worth going through it if there's something that you can do now to prevent it. And that's why I wrote it.
So what are some of the things that people can do to avoid getting cancer?
Well, the biggest thing is to have maintaining a healthy weight through a diet of fruits and vegetables and whole grains. good oils and lean protein. And there's other easy things you can do. You can drink lots of good water. You can lessen your toxins through beauty and cleaning products and exposure to harmful chemicals. I mean, just read a label before you put it on your body or put it in your mouth. Look at where it was grown. Look and see if you need to be washing it even extra better for chemicals. Taking a daily supplement of vitamin D, less stress, and alcohol is a big thing. People don't seem to realize that 2 to 3 drinks a week are maximum, according to the Canadian Cancer Society for Women. And you can't stop all that. That's just less than 7 a week. So men can have 2 a day, but that's a really big thing, especially these days that they're finding is directly related to cancer issues. So seeing your doctor regularly, using some of that research that they're, we just went on a Terry Fox run yesterday, and that money all goes towards research. But people aren't using the research properly. They're not getting themselves tested. They have better and better tests these days, which are finding cancers earlier and earlier. And there's lots they can do for themselves. So, and donating is great, but that's only half of the picture. It's up to you to help prevent your own cancer.
Debbie, you said in the when in the preamble that really that you think you could have prevented your cancer. How do you think that could have happened?
Well, we were in that demographic of just newly retired and spending a lot of time at our cabins, and it seemed every single night there was people over, and then we went from 1 drink to 2 or 3 drinks every night. So when you really, really looked at it, which I didn't do until after I found out I had breast cancer, we were getting into 10 to 20 drinks a week, and that's way too much for women. So especially when you are possibly of a menopausal, premenopausal stage, you've got all this extra estrogen and stuff floating around anyways, and your body's so busy trying to deal with all this alcohol that it can't deal with the extra estrogens and stuff. So it's just like playing with a loaded gun, and it's unnecessary. And there's lots of other things I could have been doing just to help lessen the chance when I mean, it didn't run in my family, but I was at risk for it just with my age, I think.
What was the effect of cancer on your family?
Oh, it was big because we didn't really know much about it, and it caused a lot of depression. I lost my brother shortly after my mom passed. I think that was a lot of load on him. I was going through my own cancer, and then we lost him, and then my brother had some issues. So just after my radiation, we lost him. So it was pretty huge. My husband just he said he never used the snowblower the whole winter. We just shoveled everything by hand. I didn't realize that because I was going through my own thing here. I didn't have time to even see what he was going through. So, but he told me later, he said, "No, well, why do you think I shoveled it all by hand all winter? He just needed to get out of the house and deal with his stress his own way."
Mm-hmm. Stress, it appears, has a considerable amount to do with cancer. Did stress play a part in your immune system getting run down, do you think?
Oh, I definitely think that's possible. When I was, sometimes I do promos and stuff at health food stores, and one of the number one things people kept asking me is, well, what can I do about my stress? Because there is a big relationship with stress with all kinds of disorders. So they have this great spray that you spray underneath your tongue. It's just made from total rose petals and flower petals, and I seem to find that helps. So if you can find some way to take the stress off your life, whether that's a hot bath or maybe a glass of wine once in a while or whatever you need to de-stress, it's really important that you take time for yourself and you do that, because there is some research showing that stress is a big thing for cancer causing problems.
Debbie Lynn, what has been the reaction to your book so far?
It's been pretty great because good at least 75% of people that have read the book have sent notes or letters or something online or a personal note just to say, wow, it's really affected their life. It's opened their eyes. They've made changes to their life, positive changes. And if they knew somebody going through the whole process of breast cancer, they got the memoir just so they could see and maybe relax and laugh about what they're going to get into or that might be coming down the pipe for them. Because it's really hard when you don't know what's coming. So I'm one of those people that can imagine all kinds of horrible things. But, cancer is doable. It's just really, do you want to do it?
And what kind of support did you have in you know, dealing with your cancer?
I'm sorry, I didn't understand the question.
What kind of support did you get in dealing with your cancer?
Oh, the support. Well, lots of support from friends and family. But I'm one of those people that more or less withdrew into myself and figured I could just do this on my own, which is not the proper way to do it, I don't think. I think you really need to open the door and let your friends in and let them know that you maybe just need a hug once in a while, or lots of people, you know, just a little card saying, thinking of you, and sometimes that's all you needed was just a little bit of support from people. I don't know, it's just, it's quite the experience to go through.
Mm. I was doing an interview a few months back with a fellow that had actually interviewed, I think, 120 cancer survivors. And one of the things that really struck him was that many of these people said that the cancer was actually one of the best things that happened to them in their life, for various reasons. Was there anything good about the cancer that your cancer experience?
I do say that in my book, those exact words, that cancer is probably one of the best things that ever happened to me, because I was just going down on this path. I had no big health-oriented goals. I just, you know, I was going to the gym once in a while, that kind of stuff, just putting a little bit of extra weight on, nothing too bad. So, but this really opened my eyes to having the quality of the next 20 years of my life. I'm having grandchildren now, which was very important to me. I want to be there for them. So I think the way I was headed was totally destructive, and I would like to prolong my life as long as I can. So there's lots we can do to help. I mean, it's all a cancer lottery. We know that, but there's lots of things you can do to lessen your chance of winning that lottery. So by preventative things. So I'm all about that right now. And I'm trying to open other people's eyes as well. It's quit running from the cancer. Stand up and fight back to it now before you even get cancer. So that's what the book's about.
We're talking with Debbie Lynn Smith. She's written a book, Running from Cancer. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to be finding out more about Debbie Lynn's experience.